If you think about what you throw out in the course of an average day, you might think about that and ponder it once. What goes into your trash? If there are vegetable peelings or coffee grounds or eggshells or even paper towels and Kleenex, you are missing an opportunity to compost. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Even in the middle of winter, there are easy ways that all of us can improve and support soil health through composting. And we're going to learn some more about it today from Joe Van Rossum, back to be with us. He's a recycling specialist, directs UW Extension Solid and Hazardous Waste Education Center. And Joe, great to have you with us again. Thanks for coming by.
Glad to be here, Larry.
Really appreciate it. We can talk about all kinds of composting, and maybe just to start, there's hot composting and cold composting.
Correct. And that's
cold would be right about now.
Yeah, and those methods are really associated with backyard composting.
Yeah.
You know, certainly as I walked over to the studio this morning, it's a little cold out.
Yeah.
And I know in my backyard, my compost pile is a popsicle this afternoon. So, you know, the alternative to composting in your backyard is a compost worm bin or vermicomposting, which you can have in your basement. Some people have it underneath their sink in their kitchen. I even have one in the corner of my office.
So that's pretty cool. How much, and it doesn't smell?
No, it doesn't. As a matter of fact, I have never had anyone comment or notice that I've had it there until I pointed it out to them.
Oh, that is very, very cool. So let's talk about how much, let's start with, how much food waste can worms get rid of?
Well, probably a better way to think about it is just think about how much food waste we reproduce.
Yeah.
You know, we just ended the holiday period where we all ate leftovers for a number of days after family get-togethers. And if we didn't eat all those leftovers, some of them ended up in the trash. Yeah. With composting, we can take those that waste material, add it to a worm bin, and red wigglers can transform our food waste into a great soil amendment that we can use to grow plants when it thaws out in the spring.
And what do? You put them, just throw them in on top, or what do you do?
Well, a worm bin, it usually can be a purchased bin, or you can build your own out of a small plastic tub. Usually people have about 1 pound of red wigglers, and the worms can eat about half their body weight in food each day.
So half a pound of, that's quite a bit.
So, and people generate different amounts of food waste over time. You know, think about as you prepare meals. Mm-hmm. You know, some meals you generate a lot of, say, kitchen scraps. If you're peeling mm-hmm. onions, yeah. cutting up some celery, as opposed to some other days where you're maybe a little more hurried. Or harried, for that matter, and you perhaps generate a little less scraps as you're preparing your food for your family.
Well, those and what is produced when those worms are munching away and all that?
Well, after the worms eat your scraps, they produce vermicompost or worm castings. Mm-hmm. These are highly nutritive materials that you can add directly to potted plants in your house, or you can save them and spread them in your garden. And those worm castings add nutrients, and they also provide some other benefits to the soil, such as organic matter, and helps feed the microorganisms that live in the soil.
That's pretty cool. Do they have food preferences?
I think they do, but so long as you feed them a balanced diet, they're going to do a pretty good job eating just about anything you put in your bin. We just want to be careful that we don't overfeed them and make sure that, as I said, we feed them a balanced diet.
Yeah, and sort of a balanced diet, which would be kind of like what we would consider a balanced diet, right?
Correct, yes. So as long as we're eating well, your worms should eat well also.
Okay, there we go. Joe Van Rossum, our guest, recycling specialist with UW Extension, directs the Solid and Hazardous Waste Education Center there. Great to have him along. You can join in, too. You got a question about composting or maybe some experiences to share? We'd love to hear from you. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Maybe you've got a photo of your own worm composting operation. We'd love to see that, too. You can post it on our Facebook page. For that, go to the Larry Mealer Show Facebook page, and we'd certainly love to hear from you, whether you phone or email us or go to Facebook. Love to hear from you. If someone wants to set up or start a worm composting project, how do you? What's the best way to get started? You talked a little bit about some of the materials.
Yeah, usually if you want to build your own compost bin using an 8 to 10-gallon plastic tub, we've got a fact sheet on our website called Composting with Worms. It provides a step-by-step process of preparing that bin. We want to drill a few holes in it so that any excess moisture can drain out. I usually would recommend using the lid to catch anything that drains out. And once you have the holes drilled, you give the bin a good washing. And then you fill it about two-thirds full with shredded newspaper. Add some water to get that newspaper damp. Mm-hmm. The red wigglers like to have a damp environment. It enables them to breathe much better. And then we start adding our food scraps to that damp bedding. And the worms become happy and healthy as we provide food for them.
Yeah, and you throw a handful of soil in there maybe, too, to get it started, sort of?
Yeah, the soil helps the worms digest the food that you add.
You know, I really like this extension publication. It's very straightforward with a lot of really good photos of how to do this.
Yes, and as a matter of fact, Larry, your receptionist here at Wisconsin Public Radio used to work with our group, and she helped design this publication.
Oh, that's wonderful. It's a really, really good job. And I'm pretty sure Judith's got it up on our Facebook page. If you want a link to where to go to get it, we'll have it up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mealer Show Facebook page. Lots of callers on. What about getting, you know, the bin? That's pretty easy to get. What about the worms, though, the red wigglers?
Well, the worms can be a little bit of a challenge to get. Some people might think, well, I can just go down to my local bait shop and buy some red worms. I really don't recommend doing that. Another fact sheet on our website provides a number of sources for those red wigglers. You know, go ahead and buy a half a pound or 1 pound of worms. It's going to cost you $20 to $30 for the worms. But I think in the long term, you're going to be happier, and you're going to actually get the proper species of worms.
Yeah.
You know, I've been using the word red wigglers. Yeah. The proper scientific name is Encinia fetida. So we want to have that specific worm simply because they have a much stronger appetite than if you were to go in your backyard and dig up some earthworms that are there. They're not going to do very well in your compost bin.
I got it. Ann in Madison has a question. Let's go there. Ann, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. I was wondering, are red wrigglers native to this soil in Wisconsin, in Madison? And if not, what about when you get rid of the castings, or, you know, how do you keep the red wrigglers out of the soil, you know, without
sure.
introducing a non-native species to our soil, to, you know, that we want to keep healthy.
Yeah, as it is, the worms that were that we normally see when we dig a soil around here are all non-natives, aren't they?
That's correct, Larry. You know, when the last glacier came through this area, it wiped the soil clean of all soil life, including the worms that may have lived there before that. So any worms that are now are considered to be non-native. And whether or not they can cause damage to the environment is going to really depend on where they're found. Mm-hmm. I think most of what we've learned about the invasive worms is they don't necessarily move around by migrating, mm-hmm. but more by human intervention.
Yeah.
So certainly there are some species of worms that do cause damage to forested areas when they eat the leaf litter, exposing the roots of trees and other plants and causing issues. If you've got earthworms in your backyard, if you put the vermicompost from a worm bin back there, you're probably not going to have really any impact on the area around you.
Okay.
If your property abuts to a sensitive area, you may want to consider just regular backyard composting.
Okay.
Some of the research that we've seen related to this particular species, the Encinia fetida, it's a surface feeder. And some of the research has shown that it is unable to survive winters in Minnesota. Obviously, Minnesota's climate is similar to what Wisconsin has. So for this particular species, it hasn't been shown that it has a much survivability through winters in Wisconsin.
Okay, there we go. Thanks, Ann, for calling. Let's turn to Jan and Rhinelander next. Jan, hi.
Hi. I have a worm bin that I brought in the garage here for the winter. It's a heated garage. It's heated at about 50. And it seems like maybe they're not reproducing as much as they should. Does the temperature affect their reproduction rates of the worms?
Thanks for your question, Jan. Certainly the temperature does impact the red wigglers. Ideally, they like temperatures between 55 and 75 degrees Fahrenheit. And as the temperatures get colder, their metabolism slows down. And as their metabolism slows down, they eat less. So that it's going to take longer for worms to reach adulthood, and thus it's going to take them longer to reach the age at which they reproduce. And the red wigglers will reproduce when they reach adulthood anywhere between 90 and 180 days. And they produce a cocoon that has maybe between 2 and 11 eggs in it. And that cocoon will take about a month to 75 days before the next generation of red wigglers emerges.
Okay, and then you also said don't overfeed them. And isn't the design of the worm bin to just keep filling the layers, and then they're gradually just going to work their way up as they run out of food? So what do you mean by don't overfeed them?
Well, what we want to do is to not place new food in an area of the bin where the worms haven't finished eating what you've already provided them.
Okay, gotcha.
So if you add too much food waste, then you actually switch over maybe from a worm bin to kind of composting taking place. And when that takes place, you may get a few odors that aren't as pleasant as you would like in your basement or, in your case, in your garage.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Our guest today, Joe Van Rossum, as we talk with him about composting and vermiculture, John, recycling specialist, or Joe, excuse me, recycling specialist and director of the UW Extension Solid and Hazardous Waste Education Center. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Now we're learning all about the ins and outs of composting with our guest, Joe Van Rossum. And you can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can do that as well. Kathy in Clark County, thank you for calling.
Good morning. Well, this is a great show. Some of my questions have already been answered, but I'm a very new worm farmer. This is only my third year. And I'm kind of just wondering, if you have, like when I'm weeding in my garden, I sometimes find a big worm and I'll put it in my bin with my worms, and I'm wondering if I'm mixing different kind of worms, if that's a problem. That's one question I have. In the summer, last summer, I took the whole worm bin outside and I dumped it on a tarp and kind of picked all the worms out, and I used some of the soil in my potted plants, and then I mixed some of my regular garden soil with it. I was wondering if that's okay to do. And then I read that you're not supposed to put eggshells unless you rinse them and crush them finely. And also they said, different places I've read said not to put any citrus peels in your your worm bin. And also I was wondering if you're supposed to mix it. When I put the worms back in the bin, I layered newspapers and some grass, dried grass clippings and soil, and then I put the worms back in and put more soil on top. But I was wondering, are you supposed to mix it up, and when you feed them, are you supposed to mix like coffee grounds and stuff on the top of that? Or what's your opinion
okay,
on that?
All right, lots of good questions there. Kathy, you're doing a good job here. You're getting all my work done for me here.
Yeah, I'm certainly scribbling away trying to keep up with your
questions.
I think
I got them all.
Okay, so we'll try to work our way through the questions. So your question about worms from your backyard.
Yeah.
Odds are those are not going to be the right species that we want. So bringing in kind of what we normally find in the backyards in Wisconsin, it's probably not going to add any additional help to your worm bin. So, you know, I really recommend sticking with the Encinia fetida or the red wiggler. They're going to be probably the most efficient vermicomposters for your bin. And as far as using the vermicompost in your yard, mixing it with soil is a great way to utilize it. You know, anywhere up to 1 inch mixed in with the top six inches of soil for vermicompost should be very helpful for providing nutrients and organic matter for your soil.
What about throwing some garden soil in the worm bin?
I think a little bit of garden soil that helps provide some grit. Earthworm or worms have a gizzard, so that grit helps to grind the food in their stomach so that they can utilize the nutrients from the food waste that you've added.
Okay. Eggshells. You're supposed to crunch those all up? Or
yeah.
Clean them?
You really don't need to clean your eggshells unless, you know, you're throwing a few dozen eggshells in there. But, you know, a few eggshells a day isn't going to be a huge thing. Breaking them up helps make them a little bit more accessible. But in reality, the earthworm or the red wigglers are not going to get any nutrients for the most part from them. But the calcium from the eggshells is helpful to that final vermicompost product.
And then we've got, what about citrus peels?
You know, sometimes the red wigglers will shy away from the oils in the citrus peels, and they'll stay in your bin for a little while. I know I had a few peels in my bin over the last month, and they kind of turn fuzzy, and then they slowly decompose, and the worms will eventually eat them. So, you know, a few peels here and there are fine, but if, you know, you eat 3 or 4 oranges a day, I think that's probably going to be maybe an unbalanced diet for your red wigglers.
And then, when you know, in terms of the material, she was talking about, do you mix that material in or it goes on top, doesn't that really?
I really recommend, you know, burying your food scraps within the bedding. So
okay.
Making sure you have a layer an inch or two thick of the shredded newspaper can be very helpful. The red wigglers will stay where the food is. And the other thing, maintaining a layer of shredded newspaper on top of the food scraps helps reduce one of the pests we see with worm bins. That's fruit flies.
Oh, yeah.
Just about anyone I know who's had a worm bin has had a fruit fly infestation at one point in time. And if they haven't, they may be bound to get one at some time in the future. So I found with my bin, it helps to maintain that a layer of 1 to 2 inches of shredded paper on top as a way to reduce the possibility of having a fruit fly problem.
Interesting. Judith was reminding that Jackie Edmonds, who's going to be on after you are off, she's coming on 11:45, and she will talk a little bit about worm composting to feed birds at the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, so that's, you know, maybe the other aspect of vermicomposting is not only the generation of the worm castings, but you're growing a herd of worms. And if you have a fisherman in your family, or perhaps in the case of your next guest, animals to feed worms too. You know, that certainly is a opportunity
source
as well.
Rich in Huntley, Illinois. Hi, thanks for calling.
Sure. I compost in bins and also just outside mounds. But I was wondering if you could grind up your chicken bones from cooking and apply those to your compost pile and rotate those through. Is that a feasible thing to be able to do?
That's an interesting question.
Rich, I think as if you're an experienced composter, I think what you are talking about doing is probably something that would be acceptable. If you are just starting up a compost pile and didn't have a whole lot of experience, adding bone meal to your compost bin and perhaps a few of the meat scraps that may tag along might pose a little bit of problem with odor. So you want to make sure if you're adding something like that, you stay on top of things. Make sure you have adequate brown materials mixed in so that you don't run into an issue where you have odor.
Yeah.
Well, good, because I'm experienced enough to be able to handle it. Well, thanks for that. That's going to help me a lot.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. We have open lines now and get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of our Facebook page. We had a Facebook question from Jerry. We use, our comment at least, we use one of those revolving drum compost bins. Works well for our household. It's a two-person household. Always amazed at the amount of compostable material two people can generate. But what suggestions do you have when it's cold out and our bin freezes solid? No spinning the drum in this weather.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that type of a bin, Larry. And the manufacturer's recommendation is actually that you empty those bins before freezing weather sets in.
Oh.
So in Wisconsin, that may mean that you have maybe 3 to 5 months where you're unable to use that type of a bin. One strategy that you might have in Jerry's case would be to start a small pile next to his rotating drum where there he's, as he's depositing his food scraps there, he mixes or adds some straw or some fall leaves along with it. And then when things thaw out in the spring, he can add those directly into his rotating drum.
That makes good sense. Let's see. We have, Lorena in Mineral Point, she mentions that she doesn't think worms care that much for citrus. We did talk about that. But what about garlic, onion items?
Well, I think, you know, worms have a preference for certain foods as well. You know, we talked a little bit about citrus already. Garlic and onion, you know, there may be some sulfur compounds there that kind of turn the worms off a little bit. But again, I think in moderation, you're going to see just about any food scrap you add to the bin is something that they'll get to as well.
She was wondering, too, if the eggshells could cut the worms and create a problem.
I haven't seen that to be the case. But again, if you know, if you feel that it may be an issue with the eggshells, just add them to your soil directly, which is fine, or place them in an outdoor compost bin.
And let's see, Bill on Facebook was wondering, I lost the spot. Somebody wondered, Sharon wondered if you could use red wigglers as bait for fishing, and you've already answered that as a yes. What about Vivian? I have a mouse living in my composter. Is that good or bad?
Well, I guess it depends on how you feel about mice. Usually, your compost pile in your backyard is going to be the warmest spot in late fall and early spring, simply because the compost action generates heat. What we found is that if you keep your compost pile as damp as it needs to be, so that's as damp as a well-wrung-out sponge, you limit the amount of critters that may decide to take up residence in your backyard.
That's a very good point. Now I have refound Bill's comment. He was wondering about composting meat, and that, of course, goes back a little bit to the bones question, the chicken bones question. It's a no-no, I think, for a lot of people.
Well, anything that was once living could be composted. Does that mean that we should be composting it in our backyard? Probably not. And as a matter of fact, there are some cities and communities that have ordinances that will outlaw or say meat is unable to be placed in a backyard compost bin. The challenge with composting meat is that it may attract other four-legged furry critters that people won't be happy with. And it also can be a challenge to make sure that you're getting enough oxygen into the compost pile. If you're not getting enough oxygen, things are going to go anaerobic, so lack of oxygen, and bad-smelling compounds are going to be generated, and your odor, your neighbors are not going to be happy with you because your compost pile smells bad.
Greg in Milwaukee has a question for you. Hi, Greg. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having me. I just got a compost tumbler this fall. I've been throwing my coffee grounds in there, and I noticed there's mold growing inside the tumbler. Is that going to be a problem at all? Or how would you control it if it is?
Well, as a matter of fact, Greg, your compost pile is, we want you to grow mold. We want mold to take place. So bacteria, mold, and fungi are the organisms that transform your food waste into that compost soil amendment. So we want to encourage the growth of mold. However, I just want to, just a word of caution, if you're adding coffee grounds, make sure that you're adding in some brown materials as well. Mm. Some straw or some leaves are a good mix to add along with the coffee grounds.
I did start out with a bag of leaves as soon as I started out. That was the first thing I went in there. And I've been adding peanut shells as I eat the peanuts.
Peanut shells are an excellent source of brown materials. So when we're feeding a balanced diet to our backyard compost pile, we want to feed about 2 to 3 volumes of brown materials for every 1 volume of green materials. And coffee grounds and food scraps count as a green material. So.
Oh, okay.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. Sure thing. And Chris in Dubuque, Iowa, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me on the show. I started composting about 2 years ago, and then I found out that I cannot use my leaves or grass or anything that's in my yard because we have a walnut tree. So I didn't realize that I was about to poison my garden because of the walnut tree. So I cleaned out my bin. I started composting over again. I took a composting short seminar. They talked about green, brown, that sort of thing. So my question is, right now we're only doing food scraps, so what should I add and what amount, since I can't use grass or leaves or anything like that from my own yard?
Well, Chris, when you talk about walnut leaves, walnut or black walnut specifically produces a compound called juglone. And over time, that compound, which can be toxic to other plants or reduce the germination of seeds, breaks down in the compost pile. So over time, if you leave enough time in between when you started your compost pile and when you use the compost, that harmful effect from the walnut leaves goes away. Ohio State has done some research along those lines, so they have a few documents, if you're interested in learning more about that, to follow up with that. As far as what to mix with food scraps, leaves, if you're still concerned about the walnut tree leaves, dry grass clippings, leaves from other trees, and I always seem to keep a bale of straw around my compost pile. Mm-hmm. It's pretty easy to get home in the back of my trunk of my car, and it doesn't take up a lot of space, and it works well mixing in with food scraps.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
And as the previous caller said, peanut shells is another idea.
Oh, okay. Great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You know, Chris mentioned that she'd been to a workshop, and that reminds me about the Master Composter Program. Tell us about that.
Sure. The Master Composter Program is a train-the-trainer program where we work with 3 or 4 communities each year to train volunteers how to teach others in their communities about composting. So we'll train about 50 volunteers each year. And this year we will be in Iowa County on February 21st, in either Ashland or Bayfield County on March 21st, and Waukesha County on May 2nd.
So these are all Saturdays, of course.
Correct.
And they run from, 9 to 3, isn't it?
9 to 3 o'clock, correct.
And so how do people get signed up for it?
The best way to sign up for it, you can follow up with me or you can contact the host counties directly. They'll be handling the registration for those programs. And also there's going to be opportunities on those days as well for people who just want to learn a little bit more about composting and not necessarily become master composters.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be an opportunity for you to participate in the morning of those days as well.
Oh, okay, wonderful. So you don't have to turn into a master composter. You can but learn a whole lot by going to the morning sessions.
Yes, learning a little is always helpful. And if you learn a little bit about making compost and you see what it does with your plants, when you spread it in your garden, you're going to want to learn more and make more compost.
And you're going to have, actual real-life compost with the bins and everything else right there, I'm sure.
We'll have some demonstrations that are available. But mostly it's a lot of book learning, as they say, Larry. And you have to listen to me talk for a few hours. So
nothing wrong with that, Joe. Nothing wrong with that at all. Let's go to, and again, the dates of Iowa County on February 21st. So that's coming up. Ashland or Bayfield County on March 21st. Waukesha County on May 2nd. So those are the dates. And get hold of your county extension office and get more details. Bill and Barneveld, it's your turn. Thanks for calling.
Hey, guys. Thank you. I'm fortunate to live out in a farmhouse in Iowa County, so there's no problem with, smell of my compost bin to the neighbors and that. I have two questions that I've sometimes wondered about. The first one is, we compost everything. And I'm thinking, the bottom of the popcorn bowl with all the salt in it and the kernels, I put that in the compost. Do I need to worry about salt buildup in the bin from putting things like that in? And two, I've heard not to put oils in, but are things like, leftover olive oil and that really an issue, since they're plant-based materials? Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Well, Bill, salt can become an issue if you have excessive amounts of it. Certainly you think about where you're going to be using that compost. And if you're using that compost on plants that can be sensitive to excessive salts in the soil, it may become an issue. But for the most part, if we think about all the dilution that takes place, so in addition to adding your food scraps to your compost pile, you're adding in leaves, straw, maybe some grass clippings. So your food waste is diluted in that manner. And then the salt is further diluted when you add it to the soil. So if you mix 2 inches of your backyard compost into 6 to 8 inches of soil in the backyard, now your soils are even, or your salts are further diluted. So that can be helpful as well.
There you go.
And about oil, is it really problematic to be putting oil in a compost pile?
I certainly would never recommend just dumping direct oil into your compost bin. But, if you have some green beans that you've sauteed in some olive oil or some other vegetables, in small amounts, and as long as you're really taking good care of your bin and making sure it's not producing any off odors, I think it's fine in small quantities.
All right. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Dave in Appleton, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, I'm just a quick question about how much better a tumbler composter is than a stationary one, and would that, now that mine's frozen up, like you mentioned, Larry, is that less of a problem with the tumbler? Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, really, when we compare the compost tumbler versus a stationary pile, we've got maybe two things to think of. The tumbler is much easier to mix the materials. Many of them just have a crank. It's easy to stand next to the tumbler and turn it, and your materials are mixed thoroughly. As opposed with a stationary pile, you've got to get a shovel or a garden fork and use a little brute force to mix those materials. However, one of the challenges with the compost tumblers is they're not generally large enough in size where you're going to generate higher temperatures. And a stationary pile that's bigger than maybe 3 by 3 by 3 feet in size can generate temperatures that are above 130 degrees. And at those higher temperatures, we get some additional benefits in addition to making compost, is that any weed seeds that may be present, the number of those goes down as they are exposed to those higher temperatures. So at compost made from in a hot method, you're going to have fewer weed seeds present. And I know I don't like pulling weeds from my garden. So compost tumblers may not get to those higher temperatures. So you may see some weed seeds survive the composting process.
Okay.
thank you.
Thanks, Dave. John in Green Bay, hello.
Hello. I had everybody makes these above-ground compost bins or gets the barrels or whatever, and I needed some ground one time to make a flower bed, and I dug a hole in the ground on the corner of the lot where there was some good ground, and lo and behold, all these years, I just throw all my yard waste in the hole every year, and it works great. Turn it over once in a while when I need some worms to go fishing, and once a year, I empty it out and start over fresh.
Well, John, I think that's certainly a strategy that's that you found a way to compost in your backyard. Maybe one of the challenges with that sort of a recessed pit would be the amount of air that's able to circulate into some of the materials at the very bottom of the pit.
Mm-hmm.
That would probably be the only concern that I may have. And maybe giving it a little bit more thought is making sure that you have good drainage in that soil so that you don't get an excessive amount of water building up at the bottom of the pile.
Yeah, all good points. John, thanks a lot. We have a Facebook comment from Holly I wanted to mention because she also included a web link to an article about Seattle, Washington. Seattle, Washington just implemented an ordinance to fine you if you put food waste in your garbage.
Yeah, there's certainly a trend, Larry, or an interest across the country in communities not only just collecting recyclable materials, but collecting compostable materials as well. So we've seen most of that taking place on the coast. So in California, Massachusetts, there's a little bit of activity in Wisconsin. The city of Madison has been running a pilot collection, as did Fitchburg. And just recently, Brown County began a subscription service where people can sign up and drop off their food scraps to have the county manage them through composting as well.
Oh, very, very cool. Love that. Boy, we've had a lot of great questions here. And Judith has just let me know she put links up for UW Extension Learning Store publications, the ones you talked about today on composting, the fact sheet on worm composting up on Facebook. So, Joe, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much. I think we generated a bunch more interest, or you did at least, in composting and vermiculture, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Larry. It's been a pleasure being here.
Yeah, we'll have you back. We'll do this again. That was a lot of fun and informative segment on composting, wasn't it? Coming up next, we're going to learn about wildlife rehabilitation work and what to do if you see an animal that you think is injured. And so I hope you stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.